Hi, I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm H. Claire Taylor. Have you struggled to keep up with the fast-changing world of self-publishing?
Do you want to learn the latest news, tips, and tactics to help you sell more books now and into the future?
Welcome to the Sell More Books Show, a weekly podcast that gives you all the info you need to know in under an hour.
To save you time, give you motivation, and boost your publishing profit.
Enough waffling. Let's get started.
Okay, Claire, on with the show. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Book Show, episode 333. This is a very special episode because currently Claire and I are here with 40 plus of our best friends here at the Self-Publishing Live virtual event, and we are super excited about it. I know I am. I'm Brian Cohen from Best Page Forward, Amazon Ad School, with H. Claire Taylor from FFS Media. Claire, at last, people who are watching the Sell More Book Show can see the giraffe.
Some people can see the giraffe.
Some people, yes. A small section of people.
In all her glory, all her necky glory.
So, what do you think about us doing this episode live? Like, I feel like those 2 or 3 minutes of ums aren't going to be extracted, so people are going to think we're less perfect. Not that they necessarily thought that. How do you feel? Like, do you feel nervous? What do you feel right now?
I just want it to be known that I had no choice in this. No, I'm excited to be here. Not really worried about it. I don't think that any amount of editing could make us sound perfect to begin with. Although this I will say, one of my friends was listening to another friend's podcast and she checked in on that friend. She was like, are you okay? Like, your speech was a little bit slurred. It turned out she had been listening to the podcast at like 0.5 speed the whole way.
That's amazing.
There had been like a whole event, right? Like a neurological event. So I hope people don't think we are having a neurological event.
I have people think I'm having a neurological event all the time. I'm happy to have this neurological event, Self-Publishing Live Virtual 2020. This is going to be such an exciting event for us to be able to connect with all of these great speakers. And as a result of the event being specifically tied to Self-Publishing Live, we have made this a very special episode where we will be going into stories and tips from the sponsors of Self-Publishing Live and from the speakers of Self-Publishing Live. And we've done it a couple times in the past. Claire, was it you who reminded me that this was a thing?
Yeah.
I was like, I forget what we did last year. And it's like, well, this. And so thank you for saving me from my poor memory skills.
You're welcome. Anytime.
No, thanks. Without further ado, we don't have some of the usual top of the show stuff. We will be diving into the tips and the news. And I'm not sure about this. This might actually be the first time ever where anyone has listened to our Sounders Live. I don't think that's ever happened. Like, we've had people like say the Sounders out loud. I remember in Austin, Texas for the first live show we ever did. This will be the first time they hear just how quiet they show up.
Right. We're about to see the whole gallery of people just lean forward instinctually. Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm excited about that. Cool. All right. Well, let's get into the tips of the week and I will go first. Here we go.
And now on the Sell More Book Show, it's the tip of the week.
Tip number one, street team assemble. If you want good feedback on your books, you have to have good readers. Thriller author Nick Thacker, interviewed on the Kobo Writing Life podcast, relies on a team of his most loyal readers to help him produce the best books possible. Thacker uses his email welcome sequence to offer readers free books in exchange for becoming a reviewer or a member of his street team, knowing full well that these fans won't be able to stop themselves from helping out further. Many of his most loyal reviewers just can't resist giving the author valuable feedback on Thacker's books, essentially helping the author edit his books for his ideal audience. Thacker's street team is a microcosm of his entire readership. So who better to ask what works and what doesn't? Quote, instead of just wondering what your readers want, you can just ask them. I really like that advice. And I also really like Kobo, one of the sponsors for Self-Publishing Live. Obviously, we pulled this from the Kobo Writing Life podcast. Tara's here in attendance from Kobo. And I just love the idea of connecting with your readers. Like, we don't do enough of it. Why do you think we don't do enough of it?
Well, it's hard to be visible. I will say that. A lot of people want to be seen, but they're maybe not willing to be visible. There's also just probably the history. If we're really going to like speculate, let's speculate. There's the history of, you know, traditional publishing not allowing that so much. Like there's the book events and then there's, you know, but that direct communication is not typically encouraged or allowed. Whereas mm-hmm. in indie publishing, people can just find your email and directly email you what they didn't like about the book and what they think you should change. And that's great if you're looking for feedback. So,
yeah,
I mean, I think this is good. I know that probably some authors are like not big on the idea of asking their readers what they want. Like that may feel like artistically sacrificing, but as far as, you know, writing to market goes, it's a pretty good resource.
You know, I'm really interested in the chat here on the live. Obviously, if you're listening to this, there will be no chat if you're listening to this when it goes live on the audio. I hope that makes sense. Have you ever surveyed your readers? Have you ever surveyed your readers? I'd be really interested to see what folks have. Tracy, all the time. Quinn, all the time. Mariah, yes. Wendy, yes. We have a lot of yeses, a lot of yeses. So a lot of very smart people attending Self-Publishing Live. I mean, I know you're smart. I just don't know if I should keep blowing smoke. But we think that, I think the fear behind it often is just like, I don't want to pester my people too much. But I think those fears are often unfounded. Like Claire, what's the most you think you've ever emailed people on your list in a given week?
Maybe twice.
Okay. That's still, I think a lot of people would be terrified by emailing their list twice in a week.
Well, and it's like, you know, it'll be like a pre-release, you know, like a pre-release notification or book is coming out tomorrow. It'll be like something leading up to a very specific event.
Yeah.
It's not just like, oh, let me tell you about Wednesday. Oh, let me tell you about Thursday. Or Thursday have an event.
And Jeff says, readers? Yep, all five of them. He surveyed them. So, hey, that's, if you know that 20% or 40% of your audience likes a certain thing. But very important to study what authors, like Nick is a five-figure author. Study what authors like Nick have done. And you can study that entire podcast if you go to KoboWritingLife.com. We'll have the link in the show notes. Go check out that podcast. I think I've been on that podcast before too. It's been around nearly as long as ours. So definitely pretty awesome. Let's go into the second one. All to you, Claire.
Ultimate audio. Audiobooks are one of the fastest growing segments in publishing, yet one of the most challenging formats to market. Until now. BookBub, the people behind the audiobook promotional tool Chirp, has compiled the ultimate collection of audiobook marketing examples, writes Diana Urban on the BookBub Partners blog. If you're getting ready to launch, see how others built buzz during pre-release using audio samples, behind-the-scenes visits with narrators, or social media announcements that combined audio and visuals that wowed listeners. Set up a landing page on your website to highlight your book, complete with audio clips to suck listeners in. When it comes to promotion, see how authors use discounts, deals, and ads to find new listeners. With over 50 real-world examples of authors and publishers marketing their audiobooks, there are more than enough tips to go around. This is fun.
I like this too. Absolutely. I think that I'm actually going to click it. I'm going to download it. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to flip through, and I just posted the link for everybody here live, and I had forgotten to post Kobo's link. I was like, oh, people are here. I could tell them what we're looking at. This is a really good idea to just kind of like, you know how we've given the advice before that you can make your launch kind of a event. You can make it so you're telling people when you're releasing the cover and you maybe teasing the cover reveal out. This is kind of, a lot of this looks like in the pre-stages, you're doing social media posts about the audio. Maybe you and the narrator kind of connect on that front. And so I think that going through this document, if you are, how many people here are, have books in audio or are thinking about putting books into audio? I would love to know. So Quinn and Ariel does, Jeannie doesn't, Tracy does. So BookBub has done some awesome work allowing us to promote audiobooks in a whole new way by actually advertising to a group of audio listeners. And now you have a whole page that says, here are all the things you could do. So a lot of what we'll be talking about during Self-Publishing Live is patching up the holes you may have had in your self-publishing business and also making an educated decision on what to do next. What is your opinion, Claire, on when it makes sense for someone to really make a concerted effort when it comes to the audio?
When it's profitable. Is that generic enough?
How do you tell when that is? When the book is above a certain level or when it's made a dollar?
I don't know. I mean, you really have to kind of assess what your strategy is. You have to assess like what assets you need for it and when. I mean, I've been told from people who are in the audiobook industry, like, listen, if you make an audiobook, but your ebook isn't selling, it's not going to magically start selling. Like, so there is some momentum that you want to build and you want to like create that readership or that, I guess, that audience. You know, there's questionable results of crossing over from your readers to your listeners. Mm-hmm. So I know there's just been a lot of like, how do we do this? And so I really love this, not just because I want BookBub to give me some BookBub promotions, but I like this because there's never really been a place where it's all like you couldn't advertise to audio. Like no one had assembled audiobook listeners like this.
Right. Right.
So I think that's great. And I think these tools are great. You know, there's also all kinds of ways to fund audiobooks now. You can do Kickstarters or you can front the money or you can, you know, you can do profit share. But I think we've talked before about like, there might be.
Well, if you do royalty split on Audible, you would not be able to take advantage of Chirp.
Right, right. But I mean, just in general, because I know Findaway Voices now
has an option for that as well.
I mean, this would be like if I was a lawyer giving legal advice, like I don't want to commit myself to like when you should do audiobooks.
Well, we won't get you in any more legal trouble, Claire.
If you don't think you're going to make your money back, like realistically, I don't know. Are you building your audiobook catalog? Then it might be a good investment for later.
Yeah, that I think that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, with all the things you can do with email segmentation, I know Joseph Alexander will be talking tomorrow morning about email segmentation and getting the right people on the right lists, like multiple lists. And you could have an audio list. You could have ebook readers list. You could have the Kobo list, the Barnes & Noble list. There's endless possibilities, but it's about when does it make sense to do that particular thing in your career. Cool. Let's go on to number three, link love. Linking from the back of one book to the sales page of the next seems like the ultimate ebook trick, but Vellum's just taking things to the next level. Announcing internal links. Unlike regular links, which take readers out of the book and onto the internet, internal links can take readers to a different place in the same book. You can use an internal link to jump to another chapter, to take readers to a glossary or map, or even to build an interactive narrative in the style of Choose Your Own Adventure book. As reported on the Vellum blog, you can add internal links within Vellum itself or use the links you've set up in your Word file. Internal links are part of a free upgrade to Vellum 2.7, which is available now. Big thanks to Vellum for being one of our sponsors. All right, so Vellum, we have spoken of its praises. How many Vellum users do we have and people who've heard about Vellum and hear that it's awesome and haven't gotten it yet? So when I first used Vellum on how to write a sizzling synopsis, I had never before gotten a review that mentioned the formatting of my book. And so that was really something. That was really eye-opening there. So what do you think about Vellum and this feature of linking around in the book? Would it fit any of the books that you're working on?
It would fit the anthology I'm spearheading right now. That would be a really nice feature. I mean, this is, you know, it's something you can do when you hand format, but it's really tricky and I've messed it up before. If you can mess it up, I've messed it up before. Yeah, so I think this would be really good because, you know, readers can hop around in the anthologies they may not want to read through from the start to the finish. But that also, as someone putting together an anthology, I'm like, oh, well, this changes the strategy of like where you place people, right? I mean, not to like game the system or anything, but just like we were putting a lot of thought into that, like placement, so people read through. But now it's like, well, people can just look and click easier. I mean, they might have done that anyway, right? But I think this is a great feature. It's something I've tried to do before in projects and couldn't.
Yeah.
But I use Vellum all the time. I love Vellum.
Yeah. And as Quinn points out, Mac in cloud is the ultimate hack to get the features of Vellum on your PC, because Vellum is a Mac program, but a lot of people use Mac in cloud and it allows you to use Mac programs on your PC. And Jeff says Vellum is one of his favorite things, right below Air, which is quite the favorites list, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. I like this immediate feedback. This is
right?
Fun.
It's like, oh, this is funny. This thing I said was good. That sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. If you guys could just put a lot more like laughing emojis, it would really help us out.
Yeah. All the laughs,
the information is good. I don't need be like, you know, lag of laughing where I'm like, wait, were they laughing at what I said 5 minutes ago? Or yes. Thank you for the information. That is a crazy hack.
Yeah.
That sounds like something that would end poorly for me, but I'm really glad you guys know computers.
Yeah, Zoom does need a laugh reaction and not just a hand clap and thumbs up, but we'll take what we can get. We really will. And you will take the news as we go into, we'll make this our honorable mention because this is number 6.
All right, number 6, Sprechensee Translations. Right, the next book isn't always the best advice. At some point, the best advice might be to translate the books you already have. Joseph Alexander, interviewed by Sasha Black on the Rebel Author podcast, writes and publishes English language instructional guitar books. He noticed his books were doing particularly well in Germany, and at one point asked himself, is it going to be easier for me to write up another book or try to market my books in another language? Soon, the answer was clear. After having some of his books translated into German, things took off. Alexander was looking at a large catalog, so he tried AI translations to keep costs down, but found them lacking. Alexander hired a team of crack translators instead. After translating 65 or 70 of his books into German, wow, he found his English books still sold well, but his German translations now outpaced them by 400%. So he kept going. The translation project has been so successful that the team is now running out of his books to translate, and he's now offering the service to other authors. If you've got a nonfiction book or a series that's selling well to German readers, then it might be time to make your next book a translation instead. That's wild.
Pretty cool for it to take off. I could see, I mean, the first genre mentioned is nonfiction, and we've seen, I guess it was Mark Reclos. We talked about him a while back, who was putting his books, his nonfiction books, into translation in Spanish and in other languages and was just dominating like the Spain Amazon charts. But Tracy says she doesn't want to do epic fantasy translation. I guess that might be a little pricey when you get up to that 200,000 word barrier.
Yeah.
So Claire, This is kind of similar to the audio, to the audio question. When is it the good time? Now that's a technical term, the good time. When is the good time to do?
Let me get my chart of good time over bad time.
We can decent time, good time, a great time. So we want to make sure we do the right things in the right order. Joseph Alexander is a seven-figure author, and he was before doing German translations. So it's a no-brainer. Mark Dawson has talked a lot about his success with German translations. He's a seven-figure author. Here's the question. Is this for seven-figure authors alone, or when you are somewhere in the middle and you do have a series that sells really well? Like, Claire, you have a long, successful series.
I know.
And they're shorter books.
They are. And they're doing well in Germany.
And they're doing well. The English versions are doing well in Germany. So one wonders.
One does wonder. One is wondering at this moment.
At this very moment. This very
live from Zoom. Wondering.
Live. Watch Claire wonder.
I mean, that has been something that in my strategy that I have for my fiction business, I've been considering. It's like, okay, I have like 30 or whatever books out. How do I capitalize on those assets and really expand those assets a little more in a smart way? Not that I'm going to go and get, you know, 50 audiobooks done and be like, cool, hope this pans out. But just what what existing assets do I have to expand on? And I don't think you have to have 65, 70 books or even 30 books.
Yeah.
It just depends on your strategy. Do you want to have like one universe that you really build out and like one series you really build out? You know, if it's doing really well and you've tried some ads in Germany and the English, you know, the English version is doing well in Germany, I think this is a great idea. It is. Like, I hate to even say it because I don't want people to like go compete with me on the German ads, but I have to say it. So yeah. I think this is great advice.
A year ago, maybe it wouldn't have been as doable. But when Amazon opened up the German ads, when you were able to run ads to the .de marketplace, you now have a better opportunity to sell these. This is one of the reasons that folks like Joseph and Mark have been able to clean up. Because no one is going to spend as much money on ads if they only have one book out in German, not 65, 70 books. There's just a lot more opportunity for them to take up all of the ad spaces.
Right. And I think that's also important to note is that this is one of those tactics to make money now that's going to be less effective with time. So if you want to be on the forefront of all these things and you really want to, you know, give it a shot. There's more risk to be on the forefront because you don't always know, but there's more, obviously more possible rewards. So, you know, if you wait a year, check back on the market before you decide to go all in on this. But I suspect this will still be a good market. The only thing that I would say looking at this is make sure you know how the translation rights work in the country. You're going to, because I know certain countries, it's like the translator, if they live in a certain country, but they're translating to a language, if, you know, native to some other country, they could still be owed some of the royalties or something like that, you know, own some of the rights of the translation. So just look into the legalities of it when you do international and foreign language translations.
That's a great tip. And we can bug Joseph about some of those questions when he speaks tomorrow. So I want to hear from the crowd in text form. Are you excited? Are you ready for the top five news, and particularly the top five news sounder live? I'm making a huge deal. Scarlett says, I need it. Blaine has some good information that we'll have to look at in a second about the translations. Mary Lee says, bring it on. And Marie says, give me those sounders. So let's get into it.
It's time for the Sell More Books Show Top 5 News. Number 5.
Quiet Mind, Better Book. Uninterrupted quiet time is the most overlooked step in indie publishing, writes incredible, wonderful author H. Claire Taylor. Without quiet time for our minds to wander, stories can lack depth, philosophical conflict, and theme, says the author and writing coach. Quote, in my experience, the best ideas come to us when we're not seeking them. They well up from our subconscious and resonate with us on a core level because of it. You can always tweak and shape them into something more marketable later, but you need the seeds first, end quote. Taylor suggests building quiet time into your process, just like you would when you're crafting beats, editing, or doing the writing itself. Allowing oneself to be bored has long been a method of authors to discover new ideas. Quote, it's a little gift we give to ourselves, writes Taylor on Medium. Yes, it's hard to find quiet time, but that's because in today's high input world, you have to make it. But first, you have to admit that you need it. So, intrepid explorer of the indie author space, H. Claire Taylor, here with us to discuss her own piece.
I can hardly see through all this smoke you're blowing at me, Brian.
I know. Well, it's because I'm like right outside Wrigley Field. All the players are smoking so much without the fans there. They've all got giant cigars.
There's no one out there. It's ghosts.
It's ghost just ghosts. Smoke. It's ghost smoke. So, ghost smoke, Taylor, why do you think authors have the problem of admitting they need that boredom time, that quiet time? Like, why isn't it something that ends up getting prioritized?
Well, for a lot of people, that feels like wasted time. You know, the first 5 minutes of it probably are going to be just you thinking of other things. So it's that extended, like, quiet time. And, you know, I know people are busy. I know people have kids right now. People may be like, are you crazy? How am I supposed to get quiet time? Everyone is in the house all the time. But even just if you're driving, like, you know, go and run errands, keep the radio off, go for a 10-minute walk. Moving your body can get that going. But just, you know, a 10-minute walk with your headphones, they can be in, but don't be listening to anything. That is just, it's so important. And I know that a lot of indies I talk to, especially the ones that are trying to do this rapid release thing, they feel like every minute needs to be spent typing. Typing is helpful, right? Typing or dictation. It is necessary to get those words down. But it's a two-part process and it starts with thinking first. You can't write what you can't think of. And, you know, sometimes it just becomes like almost, you know, frantic to just write more words, hit that word count. And you start to really lose the thread in your stories. They start to show it. So My thing is like, you gotta give yourself some time and be okay with it. Just like, you know, so every now and then I miss one of our shows because I'm on vacation. That's part of the process for the writing. And that's how I had to do it because I'm this workaholic type too. That it was like, a week off, what am I just going to like be lazy and like lay around the house? But it is a part of my working process to have a week off to come up with those new ideas and to feel refueled for work. So that's how I trick myself.
That's
awesome.
I just
explain my own Medium post. Y'all won't have to read it now.
You can still read it. Actually, I keep forgetting to post those links. I'll post Vellum's link in a second, but I'm going to post that to everyone so you can check it out later, you guys. And is there like a subscribe on Medium? I don't know anything.
Yes, there is. You can
subscribe to Claire.
I have a ton of articles on there, just about all kinds of stuff. Some of them are just kind of like fun writing. Most of them are like writing tip specific, but some are about indie life.
Yeah.
Hashtag indie life.
Hashtag indie life. Carrie says that she has some of her best ideas when folding laundry. Bill gets 10 to 20 miles in on the bicycle, works wonders for his creativity. Anne Marie says, do something other than work. And it is tough. I get a little shade thrown at me. When I took a few days off after the challenge, I got a little like...
Who was it? Give me names.
Oh, my wife.
Oh, okay. Amy gets to do that.
Yeah, she does. But like, you may have to explain yourself a little bit if you're taking the time off.
You don't have to explain anything to anyone. Take the time off.
Well, Ariel says she always feels guilty when she's relaxing and not doing anything productive.
Relaxing is productive.
But relaxing is productive. That's stole the words like a smoke ghost. Just stole them right out of my esophagus.
I can play camera games now for the people watching
at home.
True.
Yeah. We can both just like...
Just a lot of visual gags in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, there will be more. There will be more. Mary Lee refers to it as noodling time, which I
okay. So in Texas, noodling is when you stick your hand into a catfish's mouth.
Okay, so if you're not in Texas, you can say that.
If that relaxes you, do it. If you come up with your best ideas when you're just elbow deep in a catfish, far be it for me to tell you not to do it.
I feel like we've figured out our question of the week. Have you ever put your hand in a catfish? All right, let's go into number four.
Number four.
Leveling up. How do you go from 4 or 5 figures a year to making 6 or even 7? Authors Lindsay Broker, Joe Lyo, and Andrea Pearson tackle that exact question on the latest Six Figure Authors podcast, offering up their best practices to get to the next level. Realistically, it takes a series selling pretty well, Broker says, sharing that her backlist Dragon Blood series is on track to bring in $100,000 this year without ads based on read-through alone. Says Pearson, quote, the biggest thing I tell clients is to teach themselves several ways to bring in money, good writing and genres that sell, advertising on at least one platform, and running regular promotions are a few key ways to become successful, end quote. Also realize that all ads do is get you some visibility on your first book. Quote, no amount of advertising is going to get people to buy the rest of the series if they don't like book one, says Broker. If you see someone killing it in your category, I promise they're doing a lot more right than just throwing money at ads. Book still not selling? The Trio offers a checklist to consider in considering cover, blurb, and sample pages. If the writing isn't clean and engaging and the cover doesn't immediately tell your target audience that the book is for them, nothing else is going to work. Co-host Joe Lalo sums it all up. Quote, ads get strangers to buy your books, but your books make those strangers into fans, and your fans give you a career.
Good words from Joe Caballo. Joe Caballero. So
my Duolingo Spanish is just messing with my brain.
I know. So I love this because the authors I feel like in the challenges or in ad school that we lose the most are the people who start running ads and then it's not profitable right away. And usually the reason it's not profitable right away is because, I'm reading here, cover, blurb, sample pages, or it could be that nobody is reading through to book two. And those are hugely, hugely important. When Lindsay says $100,000 a year in a series without ads, one assumes she's still sending email traffic or something to that book. So there's still clicks happening. But when you have a giant list, it's easy to kind of do that. But it's a matter of people love her and love the book so much. They'll go from book one to two to three to 20 or what have you. What came to mind when you were looking at this, Claire?
I agree with all of it. I feel like this is really reinforcing a lot of what we've said over and over again. Like, if you don't pour money into something if you don't have it right, if you're going to drive people away on that sales page and that first page. I really wish I could have Lindsay just tell us how to get that first page really good, page one. I know.
It's almost like content. If only we could have her speak to an audience of some kind.
Maybe live.
To everyone who's here, who's excited to see Lindsay tomorrow? She's on Sunday, isn't she? Who's excited to see Lindsay this weekend? Because she will definitely have some great tips. We've flipped through her slide deck and it's epic. So much like some of her fantasy. So the thing that is the funniest about this post is it's almost like Self-Publishing Live's motto in a way. It's figuring out what steps you missed along the way. Maybe you did miss, it's almost like it's a college class. Indie publishing is a college class. And in order to get it right, like really right, like 5-6 figures right, you need to have 10. I don't know, Roland, what's a motto with you? I've seen too much Lion King. I feel like in this college class, you need to have attended most of the classes. And if you missed the class on cover day, you overslept cover day. And so your covers just don't fit your genre at all, even though maybe your book is really good, you get good reviews. All these aspects are multipliers for your books. So if you have a cover that is almost like you're multiplying your ability to sell by zero, math lesson, anything times zero is zero. And so you are going to have a difficult time selling. So I just did like a college metaphor and then a math metaphor. Anything to wrap this one up? I mean, we totally agree with it.
Yeah, I totally agree with it.
Mariah says there's no such thing as too much Lion King.
I agree.
And I actually agree with that too. All right. And on to number three.
Number three.
Can we build it? Yes, we can. Want to write more books? Then build a daily writing habit, says Inez Johnson in her recent YouTube video. She starts by creating an ideal daily schedule for her week ahead, detailing everything from what she's writing and when, down to the mundane tasks like getting up in the morning, making her tea, scheduling the time she's going to start writing. Johnson loves word sprints scheduled with online friends and gamifies her writing, awarding herself stickers in her bullet journal for a job well done. And when it comes to journals, she recommends always keeping one handy to ensure you have what you need to write at least something every day. Johnson also keeps healthy and uses her time efficiently by dictating on her phone using Dragon Anywhere while walking. Her last and most important tip to develop a daily writing habit is to simply show up. Schedule a time to write and be there, she says. You might not always have it in you to write, but once you're sitting down in your spot, words will start to come. The first step to writing every day is showing up. Claire, I'm excited for Inez's talk tomorrow, but I see her, I don't know if you follow her on Facebook. She has all these beautiful journal posts of her journal with all these stickers and all these colors. And it's like, if writing was that fun for me, I would write 20,000 words a day. I don't like scrapbook my writing. It's very cool. What do you think about this post?
Yeah, I think it's great. Everyone needs to come up with a system, and it's going to be tailored to you, but you got to just start figuring it out. And then the fun part is that as soon as you figure it out, it changes. It needs to change. I mean, like it, you have to have like a sort of living, adapting, evolving sort of plan for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you like the spontaneity, you can't really rely on it. So that's fine if you just want to write books. But if you want to write books for a living, you need to, have some sort of reliability. But what I really like about her video is that she shows the schedule and then she goes, but like, I don't always hit it and that's fine. And I think that's important too, to not like beat yourself up, because the point isn't to beat yourself up. The point is to, I do it with Google Calendar, my like G Calendar, whatever it's called. I don't know. I schedule every minute because I know that I don't know where to be if my phone doesn't tell me. So, it's like sometimes I'll be late and that's fine, but at least I know where I'm supposed to be. And I think that's kind of the point of the whole schedule. So I like that about it.
Yeah. I'm going to post Inez's post here because I keep forgetting to do that. Cheryl says that her YouTube channel is great. And Ariel says her organization gives me anxiety. Lol.
Which is legit. If it gives you anxiety, give yourself a little more space on it. I mean, one thing that I did for a while, because sometimes I need that real, especially when I'm on a deadline, I need like, now you do this. But other times it's worked better for me to just write some things that I'd like to do today. I'd like to get through these tasks and prioritize, the most important for when you have the most brain energy. And then, if you don't get to the end of the thing, it's fine. Move it to the next day. So definitely don't stress yourself out.
How many of you here have been overwhelmed when you've tried to write your last book, fitting everything in, doing all the things? Claire raises her hand. I know I would raise mine. Definitely Ariel and Rebecca and Jeannie. And I just think it's important to remember, and I want everyone who's here to look at this, and I want everyone who's listening to, Mariah says, writing? What's writing? I want everyone to consider the fact that we have multiple people saying they're overwhelmed, and a lot of authors think that, oh, everyone else is doing great at this and I'm doing terrible, which is so not the case.
Everyone is doing terrible. Oh, wait, yeah. No, what were you going to say?
Everyone is feeling terrible when they are trying to get through a book. And Becca says, each new book, more overwhelm. There are parts of it that don't get easier, but this is what helps. A system helps. And just like a business plan, it will adapt over time and change. But a system, and Tracy says, I'm pretty sure today that I am the worst author in the world. A lot of people would agree with that. They would think that they are the worst in the world. And we really need to remember, like, you're going to feel that feeling, but you need to remember, oh, other people are feeling this feeling too.
Well, and remember that Hitler wrote a book, so you're never the worst author in the world.
That was a good Hitler joke, Claire. So
I'm full of them, just full of that. If you know anything about me.
Yeah. I do know that you are. The other thing is I don't know if you know this, but you actually just said your new slogan a little while ago. No, not having to relate to Hitler. But your slogan, you said, tailored to you. FFS Media could be your story tailored to you.
I hate that so much.
It's so good. And you will make $10 billion from
H
that slogan.
Claire tailored to you.
That's what I'm saying. Oh my God. Right.
That sounds like a lawyer's slogan.
Aren't you a lawyer? Okay, let's get into number two, and you are up.
Number two.
20-sided psychology. What makes readers lose interest? Quote, every reader has a different set of reasons for devouring books, says author Chris Fox in his latest blog post. Fox, who looks at this through the eyes of a dungeon master, says readers, quote, are looking for raw escapism. Some want to experience a specific emotion. Some want to learn something. These readers correspond to three types of role-playing game player: tactical, narrative, and simulative. Each type enjoys the game, or in this case, the book, but with a different focus. Tactical readers enjoy overcoming obstacles, which means they like combat, large battles, and figuring out how to win. Narrative readers love story above all else, sinking into characters, backstory, and long, overarching plots. Simulation readers love to suspend their disbelief and inhabit a living, breathing world, wanting to know how the magic and politics work, and preferring heavily researched and true-to-life stories. Quote, learning to spot these traits in your readership can be challenging, but it's definitely possible, says Fox. Look to the covers, titles, and blurbs of your chosen genre for clues about which type of reader your genre attracts. Look at the 5-star and 1-star reviews to learn whose expectations were and were not met. What did readers really like or dislike? Quote, these answers should tell you a lot, both about yourself and your potential reader, says Fox. Understanding how readers think is the fastest way to a sustainable career as a writer.
All right, Claire, you have entered a dark dungeon, and on your left you see a key. No, I don't know. Chris has this wonderful way of really deconstructing things, and it's why he's become such a great author and a great marketer. Just pointing out, because people always forget people's backstory, like Chris, software engineer, started writing, it didn't work out, got a developmental editor, built up his skills there, then later built up his skills as marketing. I think some people mythologize people a little bit and say, like, he was just amazing from the beginning. And he is, but we all still need to learn. Diving into these three different, very kind of different types of readers, the way they consume the content, I guess my question kind of is, do you try to satisfy all the types of readers? Do you try to focus on one type of reader? That's what I'm not sure I fully gather from this one. What do you think?
Well, I think what he's leaning towards, and maybe I'm just projecting because this is what I lean towards, is don't try and please everyone. But know who you want to please, I guess. Mm-hmm. I kind of work backwards because like when we're looking at like what we're going to align with our career and stuff, the one thing that doesn't really change is us. Like we're kind of the constant. So you want to align everything else with you. So if you enjoy the tactical the most, why not just write that and then attract more tactical people, right? Like readers will start to figure it out, especially in the reviews. And this is obviously with like sci-fi, especially you're going to have a lot of people who are like, well, the tech didn't really make sense and get really hung up on that. Or I didn't like these long descriptions of the tech, you know, and then you're like, okay, so you can kind of figure it out that way. And they'll tell each other that. Mm-hmm. But I think this is a really good way of doing it. I love the Dungeons and Dragons approach too. That's fun.
How many past or present D&Ders do we have in here? I only dabbled. I don't think I would count. So I did play multi-user dungeons on my 56K modem back in middle school. So I had that going for me. But we do see John was, Quinn dabbled. Mariah's husband is a professional dungeon master, which is really cool. Oh, and Blaine used to program a multi-user dungeon back in the 90s. I played Major Mud. I think it had 2 Ds. You knew it was nerdy because it had 2 Ds. Pretty awesome. I love that this is something you forget at these events sometimes, that like we're all like nerds and it's totally great to be surrounded by nerds. Like we're nerds, you're nerds, we can all be happy nerds together. It's kind of, that's like my philosophy of life in a way.
You're safe here, nerds.
You are safe here, nerds. Sit in your nerd pod. I don't know. I keep looking at Courtney has her Star Trek background and it makes me think of all these Star Trek-y things. But,
like nerd pods.
Yeah, like nerd pods.
Star Trek.
That was a thing. Data went into his nerd pod. Okay, cool. We're up for the number one story where I get to read about my own article. So let's get into it.
Whoops.
And now the number one top 5 news items.
Free money. Want to make $20 by selling a $3 book? You can if you write a compelling series, says Best Page Forward's Brian Cohen. That's me. By crafting a longer series with really strong read-through, authors can focus all their marketing on book one. With good read-through, authors can count on their readers who buy book one to go on and buy books 2, 3, 4, and through the end of the series. Quote, they can actually look at the numbers and see that 50% of people buy book 2, 40% of those buy book 3, and so on. They've plotted out those numbers, and they know that after they sell a copy of book 1, they're going to make $20 in overall profit. Want to make $20 in profit from one initial book sale? Write a series. Or if you write nonfiction, have a course or a service or a product that you send people to. Which, here's the thing, one of the people, because it's definitely not all on me, running Self-Publishing Live, I got to send Roland the link to basically what my talk is going to be about tomorrow, which is talking about really kind of being strategic about what you decide to write in your career. I know, right, Roland? What you decide to write in your career can be based around the concepts of a lot of read-through and eventually selling a fair number of books. Claire, I know you've had standalones. Any of them ever pull their weight as a money earner for you?
Well, I have one that I published back in 2014. I did the cover myself. I had a friend edit it. We traded off editing. So there were no publishing expenses. So that one has earned back.
It earned back at zero. That's nice.
Over the last 6 years. Yeah. I know it's hard. I mean, if you're going to do something like standalones that are all kind of in the same universe, that's a different thing. I know it works a lot differently in different genres, right? Romance authors can do that oftentimes, you know, but it has to kind of like be part of like, if not a series, a very specific
brand. Like a family or a town.
Or the covers look the same or something that unites it and gives it that sort of brand cohesion. Just doing like standalones in different genres or just like a few different ones, like it's going to be hard to get that read through. I mean, even just going from like my main series and getting people to go from my main series to a spinoff series is hard. There's a lot of attrition there. And so that's all in the same world as a lot of the same characters. It's just hard to move from like one series over to another. Mm-hmm. So to go from one book to another, there's going to be a lot more attrition.
That absolutely makes sense. And I think that you can do whatever you want. You can write whatever you want. But what is difficult for me to take in sometimes, and I'm a very patient person, but what's difficult for me to take in sometimes is someone says, why am I not making any money on my books that have a very uphill climb when it comes to making money? Mm-hmm. It's tough. It's like, well, I write 15,000 word standalone Hitler books, you know, to go back to something that wouldn't sell.
Not like, the best callback we've done this show, but
but the most alarming. So yeah, Roland says rough, definitely rough. This is what you get when you're live, but we edit out the bad jokes.
All the Hitler stuff is edited out each week.
All of those are really edited out. But I really try to push authors, especially those, some of those who I've worked with in this room, that if you do not have something in your catalog that is going to be easy to run a lot of ads to, then sometimes it's better to look ahead to maybe what is another project you could do in the future. Could you write to market? Could you plan on banking a few books so that you could do a rapid release in the future? It is tough when you don't have as many options.
It is, and it can be discouraging if you write a standalone and then it's just not doing what you want. And I do want to say that it's not necessarily a reflection of the quality of your book. It's just really hard to market standalones if you're not already known.
Right.
And I think we talked about this maybe last week, mm-hmm. About the short stories. It's like, if you're going to release a short story collection and you're not already a known author, it's going to be very hard to get people into that. And it's the same thing. I mean, if you hit a very popular genre with your cover, with your blurb, people don't care who wrote it. They're going to give it a shot, you know, if it reads good on the first couple of pages. But a standalone, it's just going to be harder. That's more of the traditional publishing type thing where they put a big budget behind it. But for every big budget, you know, standalone they do, there's a bunch that they, you know, publish that they don't market. So don't beat yourself up. It's not, mm-hmm. It's not personal, but also like do a series.
Yeah. I mean, if profit is the goal, a series is really helpful. Absolutely. And I think that
if you're making money, you just want to do a standalone just for like professional or creative fulfillment. Sure. Why not?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But you just have to realize that the goal is not necessarily money. You can't always get the exact 100% creative fulfillment and the money. Sometimes it's the one for them, one for me. Sometimes it's a matter of you have to build up your platform first with maybe a little bit more popcorn type books that maybe you're not as excited about. But Claire is someone who you could reach out to get excited about it, because she can help with making sure that the themes that you build into your book and the characters you build into your book are still ones that you love writing. So, little club for you, Claire.
Thanks. Anytime. I'll take it.
Sure. So, we need a question of the week. And I thought that since we're here with 40 of our best friends who have been intently listening to this podcast, is there something you would like to know the answer to? We would love to see a question. Just to kind of recap, we talked about Amazon ads and read through. We talked about the Dungeon Master, three different versions of readers. We talked about the daily writing habits. and going from 4 to 5 to 6 to 7 figures and uninterrupted writing time and German translations. So seeing so many people improvising a question, I'm sure people are just furiously typing at the keyboard. But in case they are not, Claire, what would you say is something you'd want to know more about based on this episode?
Me personally, or am I supposed to like sort of speak for the people?
Up to you, however much responsibility you want to take here.
Okay, I want zero responsibility for other people. So great. I'm going to say that I really want to know more about this German translation process. So that's what I'm going to look into.
Okay.
I guess as far as a question goes, that's what we're doing. How do I do it? I don't know, Brian. I was really excited about outsourcing this, so we don't have to do it this week.
Okay. So we've got this question. We've got a few that are starting to roll in. People were typing. So we'll put the German translations on the back burner for now.
Yeah, that was just a little me thing. A little something from me.
Mm-hmm. It's good. And I'm reading and I'm reading and I'm reading. Okay. So how I like this from Rebecca. I'm really interested in this because I know a lot of us are dealing with close quarters right now. Rebecca says, how do you convince your family, especially kids, that when you're taking time away from your writing to think, that doesn't mean they can come and grab your attention? So essentially, how do you get buy-in from the people you love that your time without being right in front of the keyboard is also very valuable for your writing business? Are you cool with that one,
good
Claire?
Tricks. I love this. Like, what do you do?
Yeah, what do you do to get the buy-in?
to push away the people you love.
What bribes will you do? I love it. You can answer the question of the week at sellmorebookshow.com in the comment section for episode 333. I do want to thank everyone here. Roland is here in attendance. He finds the show notes every week. Please, everyone here and everyone listening, just in your car, wherever, give a round of applause to Roland for doing such a fantastic job every single week. Really, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, so, he keeps us entertained with these write-ups.
Yeah, he really does. He really does. So handsome and wonderful, that Roland. So this is going to be such a fun event that we're doing here for Self-Publishing Live, but I don't want to tease people who aren't at the event too much. So I'm just excited that we get to be surrounded by all these wonderful people. Got a lot of great talks featuring the exact folks we covered during the show. So I'll say more wonderful things about the conference after we get off the audio, but Claire, you had to know it was coming. You had to be mentally prepared. Do you have any words of wisdom for the folks here or for the folks listening on audio?
Yes. My wisdom is to ask as many questions as you can this weekend, whether you're at a conference or not. If you're listening later and you're just like, I guess I'll ask a lot of questions. Hey, it's not going to hurt. You're going to find out some things you may not like, but you know, you'll find out some things. But for people who are at the conference, every time you go to any of these, ask as many questions as possible. There's no stupid answers. And people who there are stupid answers. There's no stupid questions. I could give you some stupid answers, but the people who are there want to help you understand things better. So I hope that everyone kind of feels free to participate.
I love that. That's fantastic. Great wisdom as always. If you enjoyed the show today, feel free to either let us know live in the chat or go to iTunes and leave a review. I believe I'm typing in the right URL to go and leave us a review on iTunes. Feel free. Cheryl says that you always nail the pop-up wisdom question.
I need a drink after this.
Weren't you drinking a drink?
A Well, I was drinking a water drink.
Oh, okay. I thought there was something other than water.
Well, there's tea too.
It's the reflection. Oh, okay. Got it. Well, no more judgment from me and no more show from us. So thank you for listening. And we will be back next week with another episode that will not be done from a hotel room for me. And for H. Claire Taylor, I'm Brian Cohen. Thank you so much for listening or watching to the show. And we hope you have a great week of book selling, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Book Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy book selling.